Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
We're going to talk rugby first. Chris Henry, as mentioned, has returned to training with Ulster just a week after undergoing surgery to repair a defect in the wall of his heart. Chris, as rugby fans will know, took ill the morning of the South Africa game in the Guinness series. Details of a temporary blockage of a blood vessel in his brain subsequently diagnosed. He has been speaking to Steve Watson of BBC Sport Northern Ireland about that experience, his future prospects, and first the state of play as it currently stands with his health.
I'm feeling great. It's great to be back in the mix around Kingspan. It's been a rough few weeks, obviously, but it's just nice to be back in around the environment of all the players and to be back in the mix for things.
Did you think you'd be back here so quickly?
Honestly, no. Obviously when it happened, it was a very scary experience. And at one stage, I didn't think I'd even get back at all. So for me, it is nice to be back. And you said so early, I'm not pushing myself too hard. I've been on strict orders to make sure I take things slow from both doctors and my mother, as you can imagine. But no, I'm doing 30 minutes on a bicycle every day. But it's just nice to be back in around the gym and around the players and in this sort of team environment.
Let me take you back to the start of November. You were selected for Ireland against South Africa, but were pulled out of that match at short notice. What exactly happened?
Yeah, I as you said, I was preparing for the South Africa match, feeling great, trained well all week, felt fantastic. So I woke up in the morning of the game, and the first thing in the morning, I had a small TIA. I lost the strength of my arm and the left side of my face. So as you can imagine, a very scary experience. At that stage, the RFU obviously didn't know what exactly it was. So straight to hospital, and was in hospital for four days till they got the bottom of it. And as you mentioned, to be yanked from an international environment, to be supposed to be going out that afternoon to play a match, and to be yanked away from that environment, added to it, I suppose. But I was very lucky, I suppose, to have such an incredible medical expertise around me. Straight to the St Vincent's Hospital, I was very lucky to have such incredible people working with me, and they got to the bottom of things really quickly.
It must have been a very frightening experience to actually encounter symptoms like that.
Yeah, it was terrifying. My roommate was in the room, Reece Ruddock was there, and he was able to help me out, fortunately, and I had a doctor with me within 3 minutes. If it happened anywhere else, I'm sure I would have been a lot more frightened. But to have someone there as quickly as that did, I feel very, very lucky.
What have the doctors actually said the problem was?
Yeah, so they've gotten to the bottom of it, which is the most important thing. They've realised I have a small hole in my heart, which is exactly like Rickard Stroyce said, and they've been able to get in there and fix the problem. So for me, just to have that clarity that they know exactly that was it, and to get to the bottom of it, and in such a short period of time, it really is. I feel so lucky to have that, and I feel lucky to be back here, being able to talk to you and be able to get back in the gym.
Yeah, you obviously got that treatment very, very quickly, and you've had some fantastic medical advice getting the best of treatment with the IRFU and with Ulster.
Yeah, I mean, look, all the doctors and the nurses, as I said, have been involved in. I was in St Vincent's and the Mater, and then everyone I dealt with were just unbelievable, so professional, and as I said, the top-notch expertise, and I do feel so lucky, and with that, the amount of support that I've had in all aspects has just been unbelievable. As I mentioned, it was overwhelming. The amount of interest that people had in this and the support they had from all areas, players, past players, coaches, the wider rugby community in general, Ulster branch and the RFU, it's the only word I can say is overwhelming.
When you stand here now, can you actually believe that you've played for so long with this problem and it didn't actually manifest itself before?
Yeah, it's scary to think that it's been there and it could have happened any other time. And there's been other cases of men around my age starting to come out with this. Hopefully if people do know that something like this happens, it's not the end of the world, it can be fixed as well, which is important. I'm just happy that it happened where I've been able to get such great support.
Obviously, a lot of things flash through your mind when something like this happens. I'm sure at one point you must have thought, that's my rugby career over. I may not play again.
Yeah, well, your mind plays tricks with you, and unfortunately, that's just natural. And I definitely thought I was preparing myself for the worst at stages, thinking that I wouldn't be able to get back playing, for it to happen, straight away. Most boys, if you have an injury, you sort of have a time to prepare yourself. But for me, it was very much, I thought at one stage this was going to be it. And as I said, your mind plays tricks on you, and I suppose you always sort of think the worst. But I just feel today very, very lucky.
you don't feel worried at all about playing again now you've had that the surgery and heart surgery and all of the problems that go with it. Rugby is such a physical sport and all those big collisions.
I suppose if you asked me this time last week, I'd say a wee bit worried, but to be honest, now I've been back in the environment, I'm just itching to go again, and that's going to be, you know, a challenge in itself not to rush things too much. You know, I've been told very clearly that I've got a month of, you know, light cardio and not to rush things too much, and then after Christmas hopefully we can start ramping things up. So for me, I don't think you know, I'm not worried. I know they've gotten to the bottom of the problem, and for me it's just now trying to get myself back, and I'm looking forward to a serious few months in the gym to get myself in the best condition. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm hopefully going to be back within, you know, by the end of the season anyway. That's the time frame I'm giving myself.
Yeah, so you don't want to rush things, and I'm sure Joe Smith has been in touch and perhaps said to you, think about the World Cup. Is that a realistic time frame too, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I very much so think that's a realistic target. And as I said, in my mind, I want to be back by the end of the season. Whether that's, you know, pushing it too much, we'll just have to wait and see. But that's my mindset at the moment. That's the goal I've given myself.
But the message to all the fans out there who I know have been very, very supportive is, you know, I'm not finished yet. I'll definitely be back playing again.
The message is definitely, you know, you'll see me out there again. I'm determined to get out there, and more importantly, once again, to reiterate my thanks, because, you know, the cards, the Get Well cards have been coming in, and the messages online have been incredible, and not just for myself but for my family, everyone involved in this. It's you know, it really has been such a support for me.
And I'm sure you will try and use this experience to highlight to other sportsmen and women, if you do at all feel dizziness or headaches as you have, get it checked out in case it's something more serious.
I think definitely, and you know, one stage they thought this might have been brought on from concussion as well, and I think that just shows as well, you know, all these things now, you know, you've got to take these things seriously. You know, if you do get a bang to the head or you do feel unwell, you know, it's not, you have to look after yourself and make sure that comes first. You know, it's been a rocky, rough few weeks, and I'm just glad to have it behind me and can really move forward now.
And how have your teammates been in the gym, welcoming you back with open arms?
Yeah, most people have been pretty shocked, as most people have, even they see me even walking around the place. So they've been giving me double takes, and then the players have been, you know, it was a shock for everybody, obviously, and even the players that went out to play South Africa match, you know, I can only imagine how they must have felt too, to have something like this happen to one of your teammates and your buddies, and the players in general, you know, teammates have been unbelievable, supportive with me as well.
That's Chris Henry chatting to Steve Watson of BBC Sport Northern Ireland. So puts a lot of things into context for you. We're joined to look ahead to the weekend by Ronan O'Gara and Bernard Jackman, who join us. Gents, good evening to you both. Ronan, I suppose first and foremost, when you hear a man like Chris Henry talk about a health scare like that and getting back to training, like, everyone wishes him well, but it kind of does remind you that it is only sport and there's far more important things in life.
Yeah, it was a great interview, fascinating interview, and I think it takes a while to digest all of that because there's so much, and as you said, yeah, the most important thing is his health, and you know, Chris is a warrior, and he plays tough, and he plays on the edge all the time, and the most important thing is his health, and obviously there's a few steps, I presume, that he'll have to get over to get back in the pitch, but the great thing about it is that he's in very safe hands. I think he'll get massive confidence from this and the fact that he's going to have everything thoroughly checked out, and if there's any risk, he's a smart fella, he won't be stupid enough to step back on the pitch. But the other side of it is that he'll go through grueling endurance tests, and he'll know that, you know, everything is sweet and he's ready to go. I think I was talking to Johnny about a training the other day, and I think the fact is that I think there are a few people that have this defect, I think, but it's because of the position I think he's in terms of the seven and the poaching position. I think it's brought on, I think, under intense duress or stress, which is interesting because of, I suppose, the way the back rows play the game, and something obviously popped at some stage.
Yeah.
I think that's it just shows the level of efforts Chris Henry and fellas like that go throughout the game.
Bernard, on that, and to develop it slightly, like you know, you look back that, you know, Frankie Sheehan, Marcus Horan, there's been different people over the years have had issues like this. It can beg the question in one regard about the demands that modern sport or modern rugby puts on the human body, but like the resilience, the mental resilience of the modern professional to just get back, you know, into the gym a week after an operation like this and, you know, back into your normal run of life, which is inconceivable to a lot of us outside the sport.
Yeah, I think, you know, guys like Chris are unbelievably driven, and you know, obviously it would be a massive shock to wake up the morning of a test match, you know, expecting to play and to find out, you know, you've a serious problem. But they get incredible medical care, and for them they know their way. You know, that's all they know is striving towards being successful and getting back into that team environment. And you know, as Roland said, he'll go through a process, and you know, hopefully he ticks all the boxes along the way and gets back to play because that's what he wants to do. But you know, the decision won't be his alone; it'll be taken under the greatest medical care. But the modern day players, they're machines.
Yeah. We'll talk about obviously we all join in wishing them well. We'll talk about the action for the rest of the chat. Ronan, Munster, Claremont this weekend. You look at the balance of the tables, the position Munster are in, the position Leinster are in, and, you know, ultimately probably in vain from an Ulster perspective. But I know it's a cliche, but these are the 2 weeks that will define Europe for most of the teams involved.
Yeah, I think exactly. Yeah, it's the crucial games back to back. Obviously, you won't win your pool, but you most certainly could lose your pool this weekend. So there's some cracking games. I suppose that's why everyone is so excited about the competition being retained. And it's what you love about being a rugby player, playing these big, massive games at 5:30 on a Saturday in front of packed houses. It's a small bit less pressure than a test match, but it probably means as much, if not more, to the players because they're playing with close friends. And that's the beauty about playing in Ireland. For us over here, to the Liberty Stadium on Saturday, and I'm not too sure, is it a bit of a release pressure valve released on our team? Because it seems to me that at home you can sense the intensity increase, while over here it seems to be, is there a release from the pressure valve of top 14? So I await with interest to see how we would perform on Saturday.
Bernard, to look at it from a player's perspective, is there an extra bit of bite in training in a week like this? You know, I listened to Peter O'Mahony talking about the intensity levels in UL this week, that lads have a tendency to maybe tear the heads off each other a little bit more than they might normally do.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there always has been in Ireland a culture where the Monday morning of a Heineken Cup or a European group match, there was a little bit of an edge. Guys came in with their game face on, whereas maybe for an old, you know, a Guinness Pro 12 match, you know, it was Wednesday, Thursday before they started to crank it up. So everyone knows how important it is. It is that little bit different. No, it's not. It's vastly different in terms of the pressure you're under to perform. It's the competition, you know, that every provincial player wants to try and win. So there is a real edge to it, and I agree with Ron. I don't know if it has the same. It definitely has the same effect in France. You know, Clermont take the competition incredibly seriously, Toulon. But in general, in France, I don't see them upping their performance levels or their interest levels for Europe like the Irish do. And it's a big advantage for us, and we need to. I suppose we need to play on that and make success out of it.
Ronan, what's the key to Munster beat?
I don't think it's possible, just continuing Bernard's point, to do that, because I think it's only when you spend time over here you appreciate the culture. 14 is the monster over here, and minimum 26 games, and they go hammer and tongs for those 26 games, and then to, you know, I mean, if you're lucky enough to play to a final in Europe, that's 35 games in a season, and as pros you just can't peak for 35 games. So the Irish players should be aware of the big advantage I think they have. If they have a run to a final, it's 9 games they need to peak for, and then obviously if you're lucky enough to play for your country, you play test matches, and then you have the Celtic League campaign. So it's it is a great structure to be involved in, but over here, you know what I mean, no matter who you are, people will give out about coaching or whatever, the standard of the game, but the culture, the environment here is to win the Brennus, and that's, I think, the big eye-opener for me.
So from your perspective then, we talked over the years, you know, well, not to you, but to other people and on various programmes about, you know, we perceived the bitching and moaning that English clubs and French clubs were doing about the advantage that the Irish clubs have, but you can understand the argument now more that you're detached from it and looking at it from the other side of the table.
Well, I suppose I'm talking pure rugby. I think people may have a point in terms of the French and the English wanting a bigger slice of the cake, and yet they haven't contributed as much as the Irish provinces after the whole competition. So there's probably two arguments. Mm. I'm talking from pure rugby point of view, just in terms of you can be sure for the last ever since the final whistle went in the Aviva after the Australia game, all those players that were playing for club rugby in Ireland, they weren't thinking about their Pro 12 game. They knew they had two back-to-back games in Europe. That's what they're going to be judged off next. And that's the way it is. And I think I agree with that because, you know what I mean, they're the big games and that's how, I suppose, big game players get their name.
Okay. Ronan, who's going to win at Thomond Park and why on Saturday?
I think Munster will win. I will call Munster to win because they'll rattle Claremont, and I think they've key players in key positions who'll get them over the line.
Okay, Bernard, your thoughts on what's the key to a Munster win, or how do you go about beating Claremont?
I think Munster bring phenomenal intensity. I think that Claremont, somewhere in the back of their minds, will feel. We'll look at the record Munster have at home. How daunting a task it is. We'll look at what they did to Saracens, and you know we'll go there with ambition. But I think Claremont will probably feel they can probably get enough points in other games to win it. Claremont, I've said that they're probably mentally stronger this year. They have more options with Lopez playing. I think John O'Gibbs has improved them in their terms of their set piece. So it's going to be a big ask. I don't think they're going to go there and lie down. But I just think that Munster will do enough. In terms of building pressure and playing with such intensity that they'll beat them.
Ronan, to move on, Ulster against Scarlets. Listening to Darren Cave talk earlier in the week, was asked if Munster are out of Europe, and you know he was honest enough to say, well, yeah, we probably are. They face a massive task, and it's very hard, I'd imagine, or is it hard from a player's perspective to approach a game like this wondering or just solely intent on having to get a bonus point in order to keep yourself alive?
I know, I think... To be fair, you know, there's four big games left in Europe and Ulster are a very pro team, so they'll have re-evaluated their goals, and I think there's no way they're going to let the season slip by. That wouldn't be their style. There's too many leaders up there. I think they have a lot of you know, ambition off the pitch as well. So for them, I'd say they probably might have wiped the slate clean, and they'll start restart for these four games and see where they are after these. There's a possibility of winning 20 points, and maybe they're setting themselves a goal of a minimum of 14. So I think with that, you know, a week is a long time in sport. There's too much quality there for them, and I think I reckon conditions alone will be a tri-fest because Clonetti likes to play too, and the two of them are probably perceived not to do much, so it could make for a good spectacle.
Okay. Bernard, how do you call it?
Yeah, I think Ulster get the win. I agree. I think the pressure is off Ulster. They're all saying, oh, we've no chance. But privately, they want to make the most of it. They win, they get 9 points over the next 2 weeks. You know, at the end of the day, they might go to Toulon and they can catch Toulon at the hop. They're not, obviously, it would be a surprise. But they got to play fight for every point. And it would be an unbelievable story if they get out of the group. And if they don't... And they finish, and they get three wins or four wins. It's going to give them massive confidence going into the final end of the Guinness Pro 12 and towards next year.
Bernard, stay with you. We'll talk about Leinster away to Quinns at the Stoop on Sunday. You know, you look at the pool table. Both teams, two wins from two games. You know, massive opportunity for one over the next two weekends if they can do something back to back to really seize the momentum in pool two.
Yeah, I watched Quinns against Bath last week. At the Rec, and they got beaten up front. Now they're missing some guys, some players on English duty. They'll come back in and give them a bit of steel. Leinster aren't playing particularly well, but you know they're getting some results. Connor will know that he has to. You know Connor Shea will have them ready to beat, or with a game plan designed to beat Leinster at home, and you know he'll have to because coming to the RDS the week after it'll be pretty tough. I can actually see Quinns winning that. I think the Quinns, with all their players back, you know, they're a decent side. They're pretty dangerous on the counter-attack. Leinster have been kicking a lot, and I think Quinns will sneak it.
Okay, Ronan?
It's I think it's make or break time for Leinster too, and I think this game is a pivotal game for them. They've stuttered. I watched the Ospreys, looked very threatening against Leinster in the RDS, which I was surprised with, and they could have snuck the game. I think the absence of Healy and O'Brien is hitting them hard. I think the quality of Johnny Sexton coming back to them will be a massive addition, and it's a difficult one because my memory tells me that, you know, Harlequins under Conor O'Shea, Munster went over and probably did a job in them in a quarter-final. I don't think they liked a second Irish province coming over in terms of what happened with the ticketing, what happened on the performance on the pitch. So I think they'll be really, really primed for this one. Home advantage is huge. But then you look at the cast game away for Leinster. Leinster struggled for the majority, but championship or champion side know how to win. And I'm going to call a draw.
Okay, so there you go, sitting on the fence. Before I let you both go, Paul Kimmage has got quite a lot of coverage over here this week about articles he's written about doping in rugby and the perception that it could be a bigger problem than is acknowledged. Ronan, I know you've tweeted a response to it earlier in the week. Do you think he's onto something, or would you know, if there was an epidemic of doping within rugby, would it be known about at this stage?
Well, it's a fascinating subject. I have little knowledge about it. There's always been whispers throughout, you know, 15 or 16 years that I played the game of so-and-so, maybe on this or so-and-so, maybe on that. But it's, you know, I think when someone like Paul Kimmage gets involved and has, I suppose, if the evidence is credible, then you have to sit up and take notice because, you know, a respectable journalist like him, he's far better, or he is, you know what I mean, he can use his time far better than creating rumours. So I think you look at someone like Craig Charmer's son, in terms of probably well educated, knew everything about it, but he fell into the trap of taking a banned substance. So it's, you know, talking about it is one thing. If young teenagers are under pressure and they do fall into the trap, then it's a massive problem for our game, and it's something that needs to be nipped in the bud, because you can be sure in Ireland 99% of people wouldn't touch the stuff, but it'll always be a small percentage that may be tempted. And it's an area, you know what I mean, your fellas breaking their arse day in, day out, naturally, and then if there's some cheats in there, they just need to be given lifetime bans.
Bernard, are you tested enough? Is it, you know, stringent enough? Are there loopholes there?
No, there is testing, but I mean, the cycling has shown that, and other sports, you know, there's a big controversy with the Russians, that the dopers always seem to be one step ahead. So I don't know if the testing is proof that it's that the sport is clean. I agree with Rog. I think Paul Kimmage is a phenomenal journalist. I think that it's good that if this has been spoken about now, it's in the public, and let's see, you know, if we can find people who are guilty of it, and educate people if it's particularly young people who are doing it or whatever. The pressure must be massive on youngsters to try and, I suppose, gain an edge to get into a professional environment. Like, the game has exploded. The funnel is very narrow, you know, there's very little difference between one 18-year-old to another, and you know, it's hard to imagine the pressure guys are under to try and make it. But I honestly didn't think it was a big issue. You know, there has, you know, you would hear small things here and there, but I think that the fact that it's in the public now, and let's get evidence, and anyone who's caught, I agree, Ron, should be banned for life, because it's a phenomenal sport. We want it to be clean, we want it to be safe.
Okay, lads, good luck at the weekend. Ronan with against the Ospreys on Saturday, and Bernard obviously in action tomorrow night against Rovigo. Thanks for joining us, lads.
I think the great thing about it, hopefully, that the emphasis then will be put back on the skill.
Okay.
Brilliant. It's crucially stressed, out, you know.
Okay, no problem. Happy to do so. Ronan, thanks as always. Good to talk to you both. Ronan O'Gara, Bernard Jackman joining us there.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.